We're talking about organ donation and transplants here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. According to the NIH, the National Institutes of Health, you can still register to be an organ donor during COVID, but organ donation from donors known to have COVID is not recommended. And this guidance, the NIH says, may change. Here's what we do know. Last year, the U.S. saw a record number of organ transplants, about 39,700, according to the United Network for Organ Sharing. Are you an organ donor, perhaps waiting for a kidney? What questions do you have about organ procurement and transplantation amid COVID? It's 800-642-1234. Dr. Nicole Neidlinger is a transplant surgeon and associate medical director of the UW Organ and Tissue Donation Program. Dr. Neidlinger, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Yeah, good morning. Thanks for having me.
And we also have Dr. Didier Mendelbrot, who is a nephrologist, a kidney specialist, and medical director of the UW Health Kidney and Pancreas Transplantation Program. Dr. Mendelbrot, welcome to you.
Thank you very much for having me. Good morning.
Good morning. I want to start with you, Dr. Mendelbrot. We're now 9 months into the pandemic. How has that affected your work in living organ donation and transplantation?
The pandemic has had a major impact on our work overall. We've spent a lot of time adjusting our program to the various changes in what's happening with COVID in general in the country, as well as in particular in Wisconsin. And it has had a particular impact, probably the greatest impact, on living kidney donation. There are a number of factors that made living kidney donation somewhat different from other organ transplants. And the main issue has to do with the somewhat elective nature of living kidney donation.
Mm.
In other words, while many organ donations would be from deceased donors to recipients who might be at death's door, so it would literally be an urgent life-saving procedure, living kidney donation is considered more of an elective procedure, and in most cases can quite readily be rescheduled for a month or 2 or 3 months later.
Okay, but what if you're at end-stage renal disease and this is a life-sustaining treatment? Are those surgeries happening?
Well, it depends. So the surgeries were put on, living donor kidney transplants were put on hold during the surge in April completely.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Because people with end-stage kidney disease are typically on dialysis. So they are being kept alive with dialysis. Transplant is better. It prolongs life. It improves the quality of life. But dialysis treatments can sustain life. So again, in that sense, in most cases, the transplant can be delayed somewhat. There are exceptions to that.
Dr. Neidlinger, you work with organ donation and transplantation from deceased donors. How has the pandemic changed how you're able to do that?
Well, similar to what Dr. Mendelbrot is saying, we really recognized a dramatic reduction in the number of deceased donors who were having their organs recovered and the number of transplants from deceased donors. We started recognizing it when shortly after the pandemic was declared in late March. And across the country, and we saw the same things here in the state of Wisconsin, is that the number of donors recovered and the number of transplants from those donors almost dropped in half. So we were doing more than 700 transplants a week in the United States in the first 2 months of 2020. And then when the pandemic was declared, that dropped to about 400 in a week. So we really saw a dramatic reduction. I think that a lot of the reasons for that were, you know, as we're just learning about this virus and trying to understand our resource utilization and what kind of risks are we putting teams at that are, you know, flying around recovering organs, and what kind of risks are we putting patients at for the virus that we just don't know very much about yet. A lot of the reduction in activity was to try and get some of those answers. By May, by the middle to end of May, when we started having some of those answers, we were still very much in a pandemic. The levels of deceased donor transplants actually returned to pre-pandemic levels. So now we're once again recovering and transplanting organs from deceased donors at the same levels we were in the first 2 months.
We're talking with Dr. Nicole Neidlinger, who is Associate Medical Director of the UW Organ and Tissue Donation Program. Dr. Didier Mandelbrot is Medical Director of the UW Health Kidney and Pancreas Transplantation Program. We're discussing organ donation and the status of transplant surgeries amid COVID. Taking your questions, 800-642-1234. Let's bring in Melody now in Ferryville. Hi, Melody.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
My question is that what are we going to do about the fact that I had been with my husband, passed away 2.5 years ago since 85. He was my boyfriend for years and years. We didn't feel the need to get married. In 2008, he was diagnosed with interstitial bilateral lung disease. He had American Family Insurance that he was paying out of pocket $5,000 out of pocket just to go have a colonoscopy. Mm-hmm. I had GM Cadillac insurance. In order for him to get on the list, we had to get married because my insurance would pay for the anti-rejection medication. And what are we going to do about the fact that those people, otherwise he wouldn't have gone on the list. Obviously, you're not going to give a valuable organ to somebody who cannot afford the anti-rejection medication. It seems like the haves and haves not. In closing, I would like to say to Dr. Cinetti, Kelly Radford,
Okay, Melody, I want to pause here and interrupt you for a moment so we can really understand how the waiting list works for organs. And Dr. Neidlinger, I want to start with you.
The waiting list for deceased donor organs. So for deceased donor organs, the patients that are seen and evaluated at different transplant centers undergo a selection process. We have a robust and diverse committee who meets and ensures that all the patients that we're seeing and evaluating medically can undergo the sort of risk of a transplant, and also surgically. Once those things are agreed upon, we do require, as is being said, the way for patients to sustain the transplant is to be able to have access to these really essential medications. So there's some other implications, financial and others, to make sure that the patients can support the transplant. Then people are placed on the waiting list in terms of their level of illness and the level of acuity that they have. That's how they're
Dr. Mandelbrot, the United Network for Organ Sharing, they manage that national transplant waiting list. What is that like about who gets priority, who gets on the waiting list?
Yeah, well, for kidney transplant allocation in particular, it's interesting. Actually, it'll change tomorrow. In part, the waiting list is modified on a regular basis to continue to try to improve both equity and efficiency. And as it turns out, again, tomorrow for kidney transplant allocation, there'll be a major change to try to improve equity in the sense of geographic disparities in different parts of the country. In other words, people in different parts of the country have in the past waited very different lengths of time to get their kidney transplant. And the goal of this new allocation system is to make those waiting times more equal. There's also a very complicated system that differs a little bit for each organ that decides who gets to the top of the list. For some organs, such as liver, that allocation to the top of the list is based on severity of illness, while for kidney transplant allocation, it's actually based on other factors, not severity of illness, but more focus on waiting time, waiting for the kidney.
We're going to pause there with nephrologist Didier Mandelbrot, who's medical director of the UW Health Kidney and Pancreas Transplantation Program. We also have transplant surgeon Nicole Neidlinger from UW Health taking your questions about organ donation, 800-642-1234. Back in a moment on the Ideas Network. If you're just joining us, we're discussing organ donation and transplants amid COVID with two transplant physicians from UW Health. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, CMS, they recommended that organ transplants should not be postponed, but transplant programs may update their services and policies as the pandemic unfolds. Are you waiting for a kidney, a liver, or a lung? Is a loved one scheduled for an organ transplant soon? How are you preparing? It's 800-642-1234. We have UW transplant surgeon and associate medical director for organ and tissue donation, Nicole Neidlinger, and UW kidney specialist and medical director for kidney and pancreas transplantation, DDA Mandelbrot, and they're with us for the hour. I want to go back to a basic question here, and Dr. Neidlinger, you can field this. Can people who have died from COVID donate their organs?
So that's a great question that the nation is talking a lot about now. So when the pandemic was first declared in March, we began testing all potential deceased organ donors for coronavirus, and it was an exclusion. So you're excluded from donating if you tested positive for the virus by PCR, which is the sort of most sensitive test, the swab that most people are getting to diagnose it. The recommendations still currently are that if someone has died of coronavirus, we just don't know enough about the virus yet to know, does that virus go into tissues beyond the lungs? We certainly know it involves the lungs, but does it involve other tissues? So currently, if someone has died of coronavirus, they are excluded from being a deceased donor. However, there's a lot of questions about that because in the past, similar respiratory viruses have been seen in medicine, and we've been able to navigate because of the sort of dramatic need for organs from deceased donors. We've been able to navigate, for instance, transplanting organs from people who've died of other respiratory viruses, like H1N1 and influenza. So that's a lot of the questions that are coming up now. But to answer your question, currently, no, dying by coronavirus is an exclusion for deceased organ donation.
Are you screening for COVID prior to transplant surgery?
Yes. So we're both screening the deceased donors when they are at the donor partner hospital around the state. And we're also screening all potential recipients who come in to be transplanted. Yes.
Dr. Mandelbrot, anyone contracting COVID is a problem, but why might it be more complicated and dangerous for someone who's just recently had a transplanted organ?
Right. So it's clear that our patients who are transplant recipients are on anti-rejection medications to prevent rejection of the organ, but those medications or immunosuppressives also suppress the immune system's ability to fight off infections. So we know that our transplant recipients have a harder time fighting off all infections, and the data is consistent in terms of fighting off the COVID infection as well, and it seems clear that our patients are both at greater risk of getting an infection and also at greater risk for having severe complications when they do have an infection.
What safeguards are you putting in place to minimize the chances of that recent donor recipient contracting COVID-19?
Well, in addition to the usual safeguards that we emphasize for the general population, wearing masks, social distancing, et cetera, and certainly in the hospital, there's also a lot of additional precautions, such as everybody who's admitted to the hospital is tested for COVID. We have, again, in the hospital, reinstituted policies preventing visitors, which is, of course, a sad situation, but does help prevent visitors from the general population bringing in COVID infection and potentially to the transplant recipients. In addition, we recently instituted a policy for all household contacts of transplant recipients to be tested before the fresh transplant recipient is sent home. So this is based on one case that we had a while ago where a fresh transplant recipient was just sent home and the spouse at home had COVID and passed it on to the transplant recipient. So now part of the discharge planning, if you will, is that anybody who would be at the home would get a recent COVID test confirmed negative, and then we would be able to send the transplant recipient home.
Yeah, and so really broadening out to their community of the people who they would be in contact with immediately in the home to make sure there is no COVID present.
Exactly. Right after going home after a transplant is a particularly important time not to have visitors.
We're talking with Dr. Didier Mandelbrot, who's medical director of the UW Health Kidney and Pancreas Transplantation Program, and Dr. Nicole Neidlinger, associate medical director of the UW Organ and Tissue Donation Program, as we discuss organ donation, procurement, transplants amid the pandemic, and taking your questions as well at 800-642-1234. Dr. Mandelbrot, if you're on the transplant waiting list, waiting for a kidney right now in COVID, will this pandemic make that wait longer?
It's a kind of a complicated question. In terms of a deceased donor transplants, as Dr. Neidlinger pointed out, the number of deceased donor transplants has basically resumed and is similar to the number done by the same time last year.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not that there's an overall shortage of organs. There are some situations where the wait might be longer in the sense, for example, living donation that I mentioned earlier, there may be a delay because the surgery is rescheduled. And there may also be situations of where there's a delay if the person on the waiting list actually contracts COVID, and then we would not want to transplant at that point in time, of course, and would want to delay the surgery presumably several months. But overall, from a population level, I don't think waiting times have significantly increased.
We're talking with, I want to point this out then to Dr. Neidlinger, with COVID surging in our state now and hospitals, sometimes running out of beds, particularly in ICU, how has that affected your work in recovering the organs from people who have recently passed or are expected to die soon?
That's a great question and a challenge that's been coming up recently. So we partner with hospitals all around the state who refer to us at UW Health potential organ and tissue donors when those patients are recognized in the partnering hospitals all over the state. And so those patients who may, be potential organ donors after having died from something like a stroke or an anoxic injury or a car crash, they need an ICU bed and ICU resources while we work the organs up and do the testing needed for recipients. So as you can imagine, in the current climate where ICU beds are really challenging to come by, we've really been struggling. And the hospitals are doing a great job supporting donors because I think they know how important and life-saving it is. But it's also very hard to utilize an ICU resources for even a minute longer than you have to in the current landscape, because there's going to be more patients in the emergency department and elsewhere that really need those beds and that care.
Give us a sense of how long it takes to recover organs in a patient.
Generally, once that either the patient or their surrogates, their family has decided that donation is the route they want to take, and patients can decide that for themselves, as you mentioned earlier, by signing up on the donor registry. Once that decision has been made, generally the workup for organ donation takes probably 48 hours. There's quite a bit of testing that's done, and we're sending blood from the partner hospitals around the state to UW Health for tissue typing testing. And we're also sending blood down to close to Chicago for infectious disease testing. There's quite a bit of imaging and biopsying that happens to make sure the organs are suitable. So generally it's taking about on average 48 hours from the time we have consent for donation till the time those organs are recovered.
What about tissue donation and transplantation? What is the timeline for that, and how has that changed in COVID?
For tissue donation?
Yes.
The difference between organ and tissue donation is that you can donate tissues, so things like connective tissues, heart valves, skin, ligaments, eyes, those can generally be donated within 24 hours after someone has died and their heart has stopped. For organ donation, the organs can only be recovered if they're still getting oxygen and being perfused with blood. So generally, these are patients often who've been declared dead by neurologic criteria or who've decided to change the course of care, pursue a end of life measures or compassionate extubation, so that it's much more challenging to be an organ donor because the situation doesn't arise as often. So for tissue donation, there are generally more tissue donors in the country every year than there are organ donors, because organ donors have to be on a ventilator. So the tissue donation is also overseen by the Food and Drug Administration, the FDA, and the supply and demand curve for tissues, while also dramatic and they're very important and life-saving, is less than it is for organs. So infections are excluded in tissue donation. So patients who have any suspicion for certainly coronavirus, but also viruses such as hepatitis or history of HIV or bacterial infections or sepsis will be often excluded from tissue donation in most avenues, but they are not from organ donation. We're just so in need of organs that we're able to navigate, even when donors have died of infections and other processes, we're able to maximize the gift and utilize those organs and transplant them because there's such a need for them.
We have faculty from the UW School of Medicine and Public Health as we talk about organ transplants, and we'll be back after a news update on the Ideas Network. We're asking about the complexities of organ donation and transplants amid the pandemic. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The United Network for Organ Sharing, that they manage the national transplant waiting list, they acted on emergency policy this month. The board agreed to make permanent and mandatory a requirement for organ procurement organizations to document COVID testing for all potential deceased donors. Transplant patients, we want to hear from you. What questions do you have about protecting yourself from COVID? Do you know anyone who needs a new kidney, a liver, lungs, but has been on a waiting list? It's 800-642-1234. We have transplant surgeon Nicole Neidlinger and nephrologist DDA Mandelbrot. They're at UW Health, and they're with us for the hour. Dr. Mandelbrot, you know, with transplant recipients, they need to have a support system. And I'm wondering, are transplant support groups still meeting in this COVID era? Or how are they getting those support group, offerings?
Well, I know that at least some of those meetings are continuing virtually, like a lot of the meetings going on throughout the country. We have a patient faculty, PFAC, patient faculty group that that we have ongoing meetings with to help us develop our policies. I assume that patients are able to continue to some extent with those patient support meetings. And certainly all our patients are encouraged and continue to speak frequently with our transplant team. Our nurse coordinators are well-trained in terms of messaging and advising, and they expect and appreciate that there's going to be a need for increased contact even compared to usual after a transplant. There's always questions that come up after a recent transplant, but of course with the pandemic, there have been additional questions. So it's not quite what there probably was before the pandemic, and there are some limitations, as we mentioned, in terms of visitors coming to the home. A lot of that has actually continued. In some of those systems have actually been expanded. A number of different groups have developed in-home blood drawing services to avoid having fresh transplant recipients need to go to a phlebotomy lab, to go to a hospital, where they may have concerns about exposures.
I was going to ask you just about that. How are you seeing patients? Have you had to lean on telemedicine during the pandemic?
Yes, we've dramatically increased our use of telemedicine since the pandemic. There were a number of barriers to using telemedicine before, but a lot of the regulations that prevented our use of telemedicine were suspended. So I would say that on the order of half of the patient visits that we do in the transplant clinic are now done by telemedicine.
Oh, that's quite a change for you. How is it going?
It is a dramatic change, and I think it's going very well. I've heard many conversations that have mentioned the so-called silver lining of the pandemic for us at the hospital, the expansion of telemedicine, and I truly hope that we'll be able to continue it. I've used the example that we have patients, kidney transplant recipients that come from quite far, and patients, for example, from the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, who would have to drive on the order of 6 hours to come visit us in clinic for, you know, say a half an hour visit. And some of those patients are many years out from their transplant. They're very stable. They're doing very well. And those visits can really be done very well by telemedicine. So I truly hope that we'll be able to continue to do those in the future.
Dr. Neidlinger, I would imagine that you're in the surgery suite where telemedicine wouldn't be applicable, but has it made any impact on your work?
Actually, it has from the surgery vantage point. We're also utilizing telemedicine, which has really been helpful, as Dr. Mandelbrot said. Our living donors, for instance, will be out of the hospital, you know, the following day, generally after they donate, and they have, you know, no stitches or sutures that need to be removed. It's all dissolving stitches. So we're able to see those patients remotely and keep them from having to drive, as was mentioned before, or keep them away from sort of some of the risks of having to even leave the house in the pandemic. So we've also on the surgery side been utilizing telemedicine, which has been great.
Well, Dr. Neidlinger, two vaccines are rolling out. They're starting to be received today. How might this all change the world of organ donation and transplants, having a vaccine?
I mean, I think the data on those vaccines is really remarkable. And I think it's something in the medical world we're really excited about. We've sort of, you know, been holding on the edge of our seat waiting for this to come out. So I think it's really exciting that that's happening today. My take is I think it will really probably impact our ability to keep our volumes up in terms of donation and transplantation. We have started seeing a lot of patients who have recovered from coronavirus and died, unfortunately, of something else. And in those patients, in their lab values, we're able to see that they have antibodies to the virus. So we can tell they've been exposed and their body has made antibodies. So I think those vaccines we'll be able to sort of simulate that, you know, of course, with a shot and be able to formulate antibody in patients. So we've been able to have those patients go on to donate organs if they've recovered from coronavirus. So I think the vaccine will really be promising for keeping us able to transplant and to keep donation moving across the state.
Yeah, Dr. Mandelbrot, your take on the vaccines and what you see coming on the horizon, especially in your area as a kidney specialist.
Right. Well, I hope that they have a very large impact. There's a lot that we don't know about the vaccine or what will happen, but the best data that we have at this point is that the vaccines are safe even for transplant recipients. This is expert opinion, not data. There's a lot of data on prior vaccines showing that those vaccines do not increase the risk of rejection, for example. And there's no reason to think that these vaccines will. And so if the general population is vaccinated and our transplant recipients are vaccinated, then a lot of the concerns that have come up of illness and severe illness of our transplant recipients will hopefully dissipate over time.
We are talking with Dr. Didier Mandelbrot, who's medical director of the UW Health Kidney and Pancreas Transplantation Program, and Dr. Nicole Neidlinger, who's associate medical director of the UW Organ and Tissue Donation Program. We're looking at organ donation and transplants in this era of COVID and so many questions about transplantation in a pandemic. Taking yours as well at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Dr. Neidlinger, how many organs do you think we have lost in our state because of related to the pandemic in some way, shape, or form couldn't be harvested due to what is happening with COVID?
Oh, wow. I think that's a great question. We're seeing needless to say, lots of referrals from our partner hospitals because they're referring to us any patient who is seeing potential end of life or is they're concerned about death being imminent in those patients. So a lot of our referrals are patients who are dying of coronavirus. It's upwards of 10 or 15% and even higher in other parts of the country. So I think that the worry, though, is that we can't utilize those organs right now for transplantation. But some studies came out earlier in the year, in the end of March and in April, that showed that people's, sort of understandable fear of the pandemic was keeping them out of the emergency department. So I think there are probably organs that have been lost in patients who are at home and are suffering, don't have coronavirus, but are suffering from, heart attacks or having strokes or other injuries, and they're hesitant to leave the house and come to the hospital because of the fear of the pandemic. So I think in those instances, there has been instances where people have died at home and been excluded from the possibility to donate.
I want to know what it feels like as a transplant surgeon when you're in surgery and you're putting in that organ and you see it start working. What does that feel like to you?
Oh, that's a great question. I was a surgical resident the first time I saw that and was able to fly with the team to recover organs from a deceased donor. And you fly back, and although it's not quite as dramatic as is often shown on TV, it really is remarkable. We put the kidney into another patient, and immediately as you do it, it immediately changes color and turns pink and even starts making urine before you're able to sort of sew the urine tube to the bladder. And I remember thinking to myself as a surgical resident, I was like, this is a miracle. I mean, this is the most amazing thing I've seen. And it sort of impacted my career. And that's why I chose transplantation, just to be able to see something like that every day. And I guess I would also say there's deceased donors and living donors are people that are amazing. I mean, they're heroes. One of my colleagues wrote a book about this, Dr. Mesrich, and he was saying in his book that donors are, people running inside the burning building to help other people. And I think that is not lost on people who do this work every day. So, if there's people hopefully on your show that are listening, I would say thank you to them.
Are those flights still happening, going to all areas of the state, all times a day to harvest these organs?
Yes, there are. So we're still procuring organs from around the state. And as we mentioned, we're really back to pre-pandemic levels. So, we're flying and recovering organs whenever we can to get transplants to people.
We're talking with transplant surgeon Nicole Neidlinger, who's Associate Medical Director of the UW Organ and Tissue Donation Program, and Dr. Didier Mandelbrot, who is a kidney specialist, Medical Director of the UW Health Kidney and Pancreas Transplantation Program. Still time to ask your questions about any stage of the organ donation process amid the pandemic. 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Back in a minute on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Let's get back to our conversation on organ donation and transplants in the pandemic. Transplant patients are at higher risk of severe illness from COVID because end-stage organ disease and immunosuppression after a transplant, they both weaken the body's immune response. We have faculty from the UW School of Medicine and Public Health fielding your questions. Transplant surgeon Nicole Neidlinger and nephrologist Didier Mandelbrot, who heads up the Kidney and Pancreas Transplantation Program, they're with us for 10 more minutes. Dr. Mandelbrot, COVID can really wreak havoc on the respiratory system. Can it cause so much damage on a person that they need to have one or both of their lungs removed or lungs transplanted?
Yes, it can. So there are actually a few cases of patients that had such severe COVID and of their lung, but then eventually cleared the virus and that have undergone successful lung transplantation.
Okay, yeah. So you would say that, you know, that could possibly happen where your lungs could be so severely damaged that you would need to have a lung transplant. Have you seen that happen yet?
I'm not sure. I believe we've done one case, yes, recently at UW, and there are a few cases around the country that have been reported. Obviously, an infection, COVID infection, can cause death by lung infection. So clearly it is commonly, when there's severe cases, commonly affects the lungs. And my understanding, I'm not a lung specialist, but the infection would have to not be an active infection at the time of lung transplantation. You'd have to find the window where the infection has been cleared, and the patient then would be eligible to undergo lung transplantation.
So I'm wondering, you know, are transplant recipients, even after years, maybe decades of that surgery, at any higher risk for contracting COVID?
You know, that's a little bit difficult data to get accurate information, but our best guess is the answer is yes. Unless the patients come off immunosuppression completely, they are immunosuppressed, so at greater risk for contracting the infection and for severe infections.
How have your screening procedures changed during the pandemic? If someone wants to be a living donor, should they go ahead and still be screened for kidney donations, or should they wait?
Yeah, they should definitely be screened. The additional screening has to do just with the COVID testing right before the time of donation. There are also some interesting issues that have come up in terms of someone that is interested in being a living kidney donor but has had a prior COVID infection. One of the reasons that's a tricky issue is in some cases the COVID, the coronavirus infects not just the lung, but can also affect the kidney. So our approach has been, if someone has a prior COVID infection, for example, after having been evaluated and maybe even accepted as a living kidney donor, but to repeat the evaluation and make absolutely sure that there's no residual lung damage and no residual kidney damage, and that it's safe for them to then proceed with donating a kidney.
Yeah. We're discussing all aspects of organ donation and transplants this hour with DDA Mandelbrot, Medical Director of the UW Health Kidney and Pancreas Transplantation Program. We also have Dr. Nicole Neidlinger, the Associate Medical Director of the UW Organ and Tissue Donation Program, taking your questions at 800-642-1234. Let's bring in Michael now in Milwaukee. Hi, Michael.
Hi. I know that, you know, organ donation and getting viable organs is a hard thing. And I remember a couple of years ago, there was this big thing where people were worried about getting, becoming organ donors. And I'm just like, why? Because, I mean, God forbid, once you're dead, it doesn't really matter. And the more people that are organ donors, the more chances, you know, someone in the hospital that needs one's going to have one. I'm just wondering why is it? Why are people so worried about that?
Where is the hesitation? And Dr. Neidlinger, can you field that?
I would say that in talking to patients and families who've declined to donate, the most common reasons we hear, and again, they're sort of myths and misconceptions, is number one is that if I sign up as a donor, the health team won't try as hard to save me. That's something I've heard quite a bit. And that's, of course, just not it's inaccurate because we don't know if someone has signed up as a donor until, you know, after they've died or, you know, made the decision that they're going to change their course of care. It's not even something that as a healthcare team we know. And of course we would never treat patients differently, you know, based on their register in the donor registry. I think one of the things I also hear, people sometimes think that they're too old or too sick to donate, which is again, untrue. I mean, we've had certainly donors in their 80s and older. We've had people donate who have comorbidities such as, you know, high blood pressure, strokes, diabetes. We have donors even that have a history of or active hepatitis C. HIV is no longer an exclusion for organ donation. So I think that's another misconception that I often hear. Those are probably the two main ones that are heard most often.
Dr. Mandelbrot, where do you see hesitancy?
I think those are two of the main factors. I think there's a certain fear of the unknown. There are some religious concerns of not having intact bodies when people are pass away. There are some concerns about the appearance of the body. For example, when they'd be in a casket, and that's also a misconception because the bodies are very much restored after the organ donation takes place. So we, of course, as a community, work very hard to encourage people to donate organs after passing away. And we, of course, wish that there was a greater proportion of the population that was willing to donate.
Dr. Mandelbrot, when you talk with patients who have just been diagnosed, who need a kidney, who need an organ, what are their biggest fears?
Do you mean in general or specific?
Yeah, when they first get that diagnosis and they meet with you, what do you hear from them?
Well, being told you have end-stage kidney disease is, of course, a very difficult news to hear, and it's very much normal to have some difficulty adjusting to that. It's scary. You don't know what to expect, and there's a lot of information you don't know, and it's a process. It takes time to get the information, find out about options. That's actually something we very much encourage people who are progressing through the stages of kidney disease and approaching end-stage kidney failure to get information early, try to be referred to the transplant program early, in other words, even before starting dialysis, so that they can learn about their options, in particular, learn about living kidney donation, which is clearly a preferable option to deceased donation in terms of recipient outcomes, and generally learn about everything that's involved, because it's a typically overwhelming amount of information to absorb, more than can be absorbed in one sitting for sure. And so ongoing information gathering is an important part of it.
Well, I want to leave us with Helen in Appleton, who called in and couldn't stay with us. But Helen says that giving an organ is an honor and a gift from a donor. So even if they've died, that life can go on. I think those are really beautiful words, Dr. Neidlinger.
I do, too. And thanks for those comments. I think I mentioned it before, but I think the sort of magnitude of the gift that's given by living and deceased donors is certainly not lost on us that do this work. And donors are amazing people. It's often just the worst day of their life that they never anticipated coming, and they say yes to helping strangers. And I agree with those sentiments. So thank you for that.
Well, Dr. Neidlinger and Dr. Mandelbrot, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having us.
That was Dr. Didier Mandelbrot, who's medical director of the UW Health Kidney and Pancreas Transplantation Program, and Dr. Nicole Neidlinger, associate medical director of the UW Organ and Tissue Donation Program. Just ahead, it is 1A. Stay with us for that conversation. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. It is The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.